We'll go on to the next presentation, which, as you can see, is by Pete, and he's going to talk about where you've got on the screen here.
Right, well, I'm just going to try and explain a bit about what the potato trials here are about, and what why we've had to genetically modify potatoes, and whether there are any other ways of approaching the problem that are being addressed in the fields nearby. And I'm also going to talk about another GM potato, which has not been trialled near here, but in Norfolk, which is genetically modified to resist late blight, which if you've got allotments, you've probably had late blight in your potatoes on occasions in the last few years, because it's been quite a bad period for blight. Anyway, so what's happening down the road is that the Leeds University Department of Plant Sciences, they've got approval from the Department of the Environment to run two GM test sites, and they had to apply and provide a sort of a risk assessment, as Ricardo mentioned, to show whether these two types of potato could harm the environment. And they didn't look at any food safety issues at all, because at the end of the trial, the potatoes will not be put in the food chain. Both these trials are looking at particular pest potatoes, which is known as a potato cyst nematode, or PCN, and that has quite a significant economic impact on potato yields and the profitability of growing potatoes if it's allowed to get out of control. And the two GM potatoes that we've got, one has got a modification in which is to prevent the potato cyst nematode getting into the roots of the potato and into the tubers by repelling it, and the other one is designed to be toxic to the potato cyst nematode. It's in its early stages. They have had some trials in the same farm, the Leeds University farm, earlier, which didn't prove to be sufficiently good at controlling the pest. And so they've moved on to further trials, which they're negotiating at the moment. And the latest I've heard is that the university people are saying that they're going to have to combine these two types of traits into one potato to actually get the level of control over this pest that we need. And it's, as I say, it's a nematode, and these are thread-like worms, and I'll show you a picture of them in a minute. They live in the soil, they can live in water, they can live on plants, and they're very, very tiny, and also known as eel worms. You may have heard of eel worms. And there are millions of them in the soil, many, many different species. We're not entirely sure what each species, what function it has in the soil. Some may be highly beneficial to the recycling of nutrients or the control of pests in the soil. And there's an awful lot to know about what goes on in the soil, because we have neglected soil science as a discipline in agricultural science for the last 30, 35 years. And as a result, we've missed out on getting much better understanding of the soil, because the soil ecosystem is actually as complex as the sort of above ground rainforest type ecosystem. So it's incredibly complex, lots of different organisms all working together, and if you remove one of them, that can upset the whole function of the way the soil works. And if you add foreign chemicals or foreign proteins into it, it may also have an effect. Most of the species of nematodes in the soil are harmless, and they're not harmful to plants, but some are pests and parasites. And for the potato cyst nematode, which is the pest we're looking at in these trials, there are two, and there's an interesting story. This is just to show you what a nematode looks like. This is this wiggly thing over here. That's about a very, very tiny, you could see it under a microscope, but you really notice it with the naked eye. And they invade the roots of growing potatoes and produce these cysts on the roots. And as they grow, they suck out the nutrients from the plant, and you can get dieback on the leaves. So that affects the amount of sugar that's being produced in the leaves, and therefore the yields of the potatoes are affected. And the potato, this is a close-up of the potato skin. As you can see, it's all potted and damaged, and therefore not as marketable as if the pest wasn't there. So, as I said, we've got two species of these nematodes, and it's a very, there's a yellow and a white species. The yellow used to be the dominant species, and because the way potatoes have been grown over the years, it to be quite a problem. So potato breeders started to focus on breeding in resistance to these nematodes, and they were selecting varieties and individual plants which had good resistance, and eventually they did manage to get quite a few potatoes which were resistant through natural crossing of and traditional breeding techniques of potatoes. And the potato which you might have heard of is Maris Piper, which is the most commonly grown potato in the UK. It's become a very commercial variety, much loved by people who make crisps and chips, because it's got lots of dry matter, and that's what they like, and it makes good chips. And that has got good resistance to the yellow potato cyst nematode. But because of the idea that the varieties that we had got some resistance, farmers then started growing on the same land more frequently, and that sort of opened the door for the less common one, the white one, to become more dominant. And that's actually a much more difficult pest to deal with, because it's more it can survive in the soil much better, and it's much more difficult to eradicate using resistance genes. And at the moment, there's only about two varieties that have got any resistance to this white one. One of them is Sante. The variety Sante, that's got both good yellow resistance, but only partial white resistance. So the genetics from traditional breeding have not quite succeeded in getting resistances in. The early crops and for second early crops don't usually get infected with this pest, because they're usually lifted before they get going, and it's the infections start picking up in sort of mid July to August, when the main crop is putting on all its body bulk. So it's the main crops that get affected worst, and you can get very high levels of loss, running into millions of pounds if it gets out of control. Now, the way these nematodes operate is that they need to get potatoes to breed. So without potatoes, they sit there in the soil waiting for potatoes to come along. They can persist in soil as cysts, which are very resistant to weathering and frost and all that sort of thing. And they can be there for 10 years or even longer, waiting for a potato crop to come along. And in a really bad infection, you can get 25 million of these cysts per hectare. So you can see the potential for serious damage is there. And every cyst will produce about between 200 and 600 larvae, which then develop into adults, which invade the plant. And as I said, the actual hatching of the cysts is triggered by chemicals which are given out by potato roots. So they sit there until the potato is planted and starts producing roots, and then they suddenly wake up and think, "Oh, it's time to start reproducing," and off they go. So if you've got 25 million of these sitting in around and they all sort of go, "Hey, we're off," they're in big trouble, basically. So you could almost lose your crop. So it's a very important crop, and it's the females that do all the attacking of the tubers and damage the roots, and after they've mated. So, as I said, it became a problem because of we thought we'd cracked it with the resistance in things like Maris Piper, which at one point was about 35% of the total area of potatoes grown. So we had one variety covering 35% of the entire potato crop, because people love it. Supermarkets like it because it's uniform, and you can boil it, chip it, and so it's got all the sorts of qualities that people like for cooking, and it looks nice, and all those sorts of things. And as I said, the white one came in and started causing problems. And we started growing potatoes very close together, so in rotation. So instead of having them spread out over maybe 7 years, we started them growing every 5 years or even less. And that gave a chance for the pest population, these cysts, 25 million cysts, to start building up in numbers. And so we've now got quite a large percentage of our potato land which are infested with these things. And you can spread them quite easily. So if you have a potato harvester comes in and it harvests a potato in one field, and then it cuts soil off on its tyres or on the equipment to a neighbouring field, it can carry the spore, these cysts, into the neighbouring field and infest that field. And people do a lot of machinery sharing with potatoes, so it can move from farm to farm quite rapidly. And sometimes it's patchy in fields. It's not a whole field, but just a patch of a field. And another way of it spreading is actually through it blowing with soil. So some of the potato soils, like in the fens, which basically peat, when they dry out, they get very powdery, and you can see soil blowing in the wind on the fens. In fact, I was up in, am I up or am I down? I think I'm almost level in Humberside sometime, and there are actually drifts of soil along the road where, like a snowstorm, you can see the drifts of soil coming off the field. So potential for them to spread that way. And the only other way, apart from genetic resistance, which is bred into things like Mary's Piper, was to use chemicals. There's one that chemicals that's used as sort of fumigant of the soil, where you sort of blast it into the soil and try and reduce the number of cysts. You never wipe them all out, you just reduce the number. And the other chemical options are based on pesticides which affect the nervous system of people. So things like organophosphates, you may have heard of. These were often used in sheep dip, and farmers who used them found that they were becoming quite ill as a result of exposure to these, essentially, nerve poisons. And so those are not very often used, and some of them are actually banned now. So the options for chemical control of this are limited, because they're not very effective, and they're expensive, and they're not really worth a candle, really. So how do we deal with this without, given the situation that we've got quite a high level of infestation of these pests in our potato land? And at the moment, we don't really have a very good genetic control. We don't really have a particularly good chemical control over them. So the key is to avoid it in the first place. And you do that by having long rotations between potatoes. So instead of growing it every 5 years or 3 years in some cases, and one of the reasons that farmers are tempted into growing things too close together is because you can get quite a good return on potatoes compared with some other crops. So it's tempting to shorten the rotation, but it's very important in terms of controlling this pest that you keep the rotation as long as possible. And 7 years is probably the minimum. It'd be much better to have it more like 10. So the other thing is to actually test your soil before you plant. And in Scotland and Northern Ireland, you're required by law to test. And if you don't test, if you do test and you find it, you're not allowed to plant potatoes on that land. So that's a regulatory method. Another method is to actually produce a very healthy soil, which is high in a lot of biodiversity, lots of fungi, lots of bacteria, some of which may be natural enemies of the cyst nematode, and control it, partially control it. The other is hygiene, which I've mentioned before, washing equipment before it leaves the field, washing Wellington boots, and making sure that public footpaths, people aren't trapping across the potato field and carrying the cysts on their wellies as they go on to the next field. And again, making sure you've got thick hedges to prevent soil erosion. And also looking at, which I'll come into in a little bit more detail, is the idea of having decoy crops. Now, these are very fast developing. We've got two companies already selling this as a means to control this particular pest. They are a relative of potatoes. They don't produce tubers. They're sown in sort of spring, and they produce the same chemicals into the soil as potatoes, And so the nematodes think there's potatoes there. They all wake up, but there's nothing for them to feed on because there are no tubers. And then you can just cut the crop, incorporate it into the soil as a green manure, and you've substantially reduced the population by up to 50% in one season. And as I say, these two companies, Greenbell and Branston, have already started to sell it. Resistance, I just should say that even with the best resistance in the world, GM or not, the pest has the potential to overcome natural resistance because of evolutionary pressures and mutations. And then there are under development and some ideas about using fungi and bacteria to incorporate into the soil artificially to produce that is the this decoy crop. As you can see, the flower of it is almost identical to a potato flower, and it's related to the nightshade family, so they're all in the same family. Going back one, I got that out of order. So very quickly, I'll just talk about this other problem which they're trying to solve by genetic engineering, which is late potato bite, and it can wipe out the crop, and that's the disease that caused the Irish potato famines in the 1840s, because they had no resistance to it at all. Current controls are mainly through genetic resistance, which is being bred in, and there's lots of varieties that have got quite good resistance, and by fungicides, and in bad years, potato crops can actually be sprayed up to 20 times with fungicides to control this disease. But new blight strains are coming in all the time, which can overcome resistance and also potentially overcome fungicides as well. So the fungus disease can become resistant to the fungicide, so it's no longer effective. Two attempts have been made to GM. One is by the German company BASF. And they did some trials in Cambridgeshire, and they've now abandoned them and stopped them, and they don't appear to be developing a commercial variety of this GM blight-resistant potatoes. And another is at the Sainsbury Laboratory at Norwich, where they've taken genes from wild relatives of potatoes in South America, which are GIB blight-resistant, and put them into Desiree potatoes. However, beavering away in North Wales, there's a very interesting project called the Shibari Research Trust, which has been breeding potatoes for more than 10 years from a collection of potatoes from Hungary by the family called Shibari. And they discovered that these potatoes naturally have incredibly high resistance to blight. And they bred up a number of varieties, and there's a leaflet on the table over there if you want to take it away, which shows you all the varieties that are available, six at the moment. And these potatoes show astonishing resistance to blight. They've been bred traditionally without using any GM at all, and you can see just there, that little spot there on the leaf is actually blight. But what happens with these potatoes is when the blight invades a cell, all the cells around it immediately die, so it can't spread across the whole leaf, so it's just confined to one cell. And that prevents the disease getting a hold on the whole plant. And this is all being carried out by the charity, and they've been very successful in getting this very strong blight resistance through into their commercial varieties. I've been growing them for about 6 years, and they are astonishingly resistant and persistent as well, and it looks like there is a more than one resistance gene involved in the genetics of the plant, and they've got them for all sorts of varieties and all sorts of uses, and they've got different colours, whites, reds, purples, and they are very, very good in low input systems because they're very deep rooting. They've got resistance, some resistance to PCN and viruses and some other fungal diseases. And it should be pointed out that there's about 600 pests and diseases of potatoes in the UK. So if you control one, you're likely to get problems with another. And I think, having grown them for 5 years, they're quite resistant to slug damage as well. And this just shows you how effective they are. This is their trial plot, which has been deliberately infected with a strain of blight called Blue 13, which is the most virulent strain there is, and it's the one that's common all around the country at the moment. This one is Lady Belka, which is a variety which is supposed to have very high resistance to blight, and as you can see, it's completely wiped out by Blue 13 strain, which has deliberately been inoculated onto it. And this is Sharp O'Mara, which is one of their first variety. And that has been inoculated with Blue 13, and it grows to be that high, and it will grow until the first frost. And it has incredibly robust resistance, and has good flavour, tastes all right, cooks okay, and there is no problem with it at all. So that's the story of GM potatoes and the alternatives, because with blight, the only option is really breeding resistance, because there is no other way you can control it. And it's a sort of constant battle to keep ahead of the disease, which is evolving all the time, to try and get around the resistance of the plant. So there may come a time when we get a new strain of blight to which we have no resistance genes at all. That's a possibility in the future. But at the moment, we've got a very good set of genes in these Shibari potatoes. They have received no public money to do that research. The people at Leeds have received £1.7 million to do their research and produce no commercial varieties at all. The people in Norwich have received £1.7 million and have produced no commercial varieties at all. So a small charity run by two blokes, and I think they've got a dog as well, have done it off their own resources, and the only income at the moment is from the potatoes that they sell through Thompson and Morgan's and to farmers like this man.
Well, thank you very much, Pete. Yeah, very helpful. And also, very easy to listen to. Thank you very much for that.